Welcome to the Huntington Disease edition of Rare Disease Advisors Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the HD community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Special Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. Today we're talking with Astrid Arnesen, who lives in Kristiansand, Norway. Astrid is president of the European Huntington Association, or EHA, an umbrella organization registered in Belgium that represents the national Huntington disease associations of 32 countries, including several non-EU member states such as Israel, Russia, and the United Kingdom. Among other things, the EHA is now busy planning its 2023 conference for patients and caregivers for October 19th to 22nd in the Belgian city of Blankenburg. Thank you so much for joining us, Astrid.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Sure. So Rare Disease Advisor has just started covering Huntington disease, and this is our first podcast on the subject. Could you please give us an overview about the illness and why you became involved from a personal perspective?
Yeah, no, I'm really happy that you have shown interest in Huntington's disease, because it's really a devastating disease. And although we are rare, we are one of the most common rare diseases, actually. So that's really good to hear. And how to start? Because it's a very comprehensive kind of disease and story to tell, to cover what Huntington's is about. But it's a neurological disease, so it affects your brain. It's hereditary, so if one of your parents has Huntington's disease, you have a 50% chance of having the same gene and the disease yourself. So that's also really a big burden on families. This is not a one case, single case in a family. It's really the family that's being affected very, very hard by the disease.
I've heard it said that Huntington is like having ALS, Parkinson, and Alzheimer's all at once. Is that an accurate assessment?
So it starts with subtle symptoms that can be problems with regulating your emotions. You get very easily, you know, distracted or emotionally upset. And then also to work and to do, you know, multitask and all these cognitive abilities that you have start to decline. And that's really hard on people. And then you also develop motor symptoms. You get involuntary movements and you have problems controlling your movements. And some stage out in the disease, you really get more and more helpless, have problems with speaking and eating and swallowing, and you end up in a bed. I have a sister with the disease in a late stage. She's in a care home and fully dependent on help 24/7 with everything.
I see. Woody Guthrie had the disease famously, and I understand that he and his wife were inspiration for your organization.
Definitely. One of the wives of Woody Guthrie, the latest wife, was really the initiator of the family organization and started in the U.S. And then she also reached out internationally because she understood the importance of family members to organize themselves and get in touch with each other to be a voice for the needs of the patients and the families. So she was really a pioneer also internationally and encouraged my European predecessors to organize ourselves also on the European level as well as national levels.
Right. How widespread is Huntington in Europe, and are there disparities in the prevalence of the disease from one country to another?
That's a very good question, because honestly, we don't know. We don't know. No country has very good formal register in their healthcare system, so we don't know. Of course, there are estimates and some investigations that has been done. So depending on who you ask, you will get a little bit of different answers. But mostly, researchers refer to a prevalence of between 7 and 12 among 100,000 inhabitants, and that's in general in Europe.
So does that vary greatly from one country to another? I understand Scotland does have a high rate of Huntington.
Yeah, so Scotland has a very good, I think it varies in terms of how good overview you have. And in Scotland, it's a relatively small country with around 5 million inhabitants, I think. They have a very good network with an overview of the families, and they estimate the prevalence to be 20 of 100,000 inhabitants.
What about at home in Norway?
Yes. The official number is that we have of a population, again, of our 5 million, we have 300 patients or 350. But if you ask me as a part of the organization, patient organization there, I would say no, it's probably higher. We will estimate it to be 500, so around 10 per 100,000.
I see. So Norway, we'll start with that, is an example of an excellent, highly regarded social welfare state that takes care of its people. That said, how well are people with Huntington being cared for in Norway?
Yes, we definitely have a lot of good things with our healthcare system and social system here in Norway. But nevertheless, what affects Huntington families is so profound, and also what you meet, because it's a rare disease and it's a complex disease, there are very few real experts in the field. And that's a problem, because you go to your doctor, your GP, or you see somebody in a hospital, and very few of them know just a little or nothing about Huntington's disease. So families feel that they have to educate their healthcare providers from the start over and over again. And it's a real challenge for people to get the best follow-up. But of course, we are better off in Norway than in Romania or other more Eastern, in particular European countries. And there are some really, really good examples standing out. I think Scotland being one of them, and Belgium and the Netherlands are other countries where they're doing pretty well in terms of having networks and have the knowledge and expertise flow between the institutions, healthcare providers.
So your organization basically started as an outgrowth of the United States, of where Huntington organization was more well established and had a much bigger base of patients to begin with, right?
Yeah, maybe. So I wasn't there. We were established in 1986. And I think the American Association was in 76, if I'm not wrong. So it was also a little bit early, but definitely Marjorie Guthrie was an inspirational source. There had been some early associations also in Central Europe established. And then when Marjorie came and inspired and said, we need to organize also internationally, they did. They decided to do that. Also, on the International Huntington Association was established at that time, around that time.
I'd like to ask you something, and this is about the perception of patients with HD. When Woody Guthrie first developed the disease, he had emotional outbursts and people didn't know what was wrong with him. And as I understand, he was institutionalized for a while, correct?
Exactly. And that's how it's for not for everybody, but for many people start, because your emotional regulation, your filter, so to speak, is being, you know, harmed by the disease. And you become really troublesome, both for yourself as a patient, but not the least for your close family members. And still, it happens that people are hospitalized with really wrong diagnosis and are not really understood at all, that this is a disease and not just a difficult person.
But it's still a disease that if you have a family history, you and you're tested, you basically know from a young age that you will get sick someday, right?
Yes, because since 1993, it has been possible to do a blood test and then know if you have the Huntington gene, so the mutation that caused the disease. And if you have this mutation, you will develop the disease at some point in life. So you won't know if it will start when I'm 30, 40, 50, even 60, or later.
But
the oldest person I met who had been diagnosed with symptoms with Huntington's disease was 80 years old.
You've lost family members to the disease. So despite that, you know that there are things you can do to delay the onset of the disease through diet, through exercise, through basically healthy living, correct?
Yes. I mean, of course, there are many things you can do to take best care of your own health. And those are really the general things that are good for you also in relation to your heart or whatever. So to take good care of yourself and be active also socially and you know, cognitive, use your head and don't be passive is good for you, because it keeps you kind of compensate. If you have the disease, you can compensate longer. That is really just common sense in a way.
Have you been tested?
I have been tested, yes.
Can we talk about that? Are you?
It is really a very personal question, but I'm open about it. So we learned in around 83 that my mother had Huntington's disease and that I had then the 50% risk of having the same gene and disease as my mother. But I chose for many, many years not to test because I couldn't do anything about it. I mean, if I had the gene, I could take care of myself, but I would take care of myself anyway. So I didn't test until I was 48 years old, because then one of our daughters said she needed to know about herself. So then I tested, and that was really, really scary. But I did it because our daughter needed to know, and it was the right thing to do at that time in my life. So I did go through the procedure with genetic counseling that you should do to be prepared for the knowledge that you gain. And I was really lucky. I learned that I did not have that gene and that I was HD-free. And then consequently, our daughters would not have it either.
Wow. So this is kind of an unusual disease in that, you know, years and maybe even decades ahead of time, whether you will eventually develop this disease. And as you said, there's currently no cure. There are some treatments, and I'd like to talk about that in a bit. But there is currently no cure. And I'm sure that one of the things your organization is doing is helping promote research and in finding something.
Definitely. We have several, you know, key objectives, and one of them is to inform about what's going on, because that's important for people to understand that there is a lot of really good and promising work ongoing which nourish the hope, because you can feel quite, you know, hopeless, and I know many people feel that there is no hope, but there is, and we keep informing about what's going on so we can nourish hope. And also we support stakeholders, industry, academic you know, groups who do Huntington research, and we try to provide our input to guide them and make sure that it's will be helpful for family members and patients, and support them in whatever capacity we can.
Sure. I just want to clarify for our readers and our listeners that your association is not to be confused with the European Huntington's Disease Network, which is based in Germany.
Yes. Right. Yes, that's fine you bring up, because we are sometimes really seen as I don't know, the same or whatever, but it's two different groups and we collaborate, but we are the patient organizations, so the NGOs here in Europe, and we are the umbrella for that. And the European Huntington Disease Network are individuals, so healthcare professionals, investigators, researchers, and family members can be members of that. So they have several thousand members, individual members of the EHTN, which is a more professional-oriented network.
Right. And with several potential therapies on the horizon, both the FDA and the European Medicines Agency, of course, are evaluating drugs all the time. Can we talk about what's out there now and how effective they are?
Yes, we can. And it's really, if we look just 10 years back and now, the situation has changed completely. So you are right. There are two drugs approved for the U.S. and Canada. And that is drugs that are doing something with the movement. So there are now, compared to 10 years ago, there are now, where there were just a couple or three maybe companies doing something in Huntington's disease, there are now, I think it's over 40 pharma companies working with treatments for Huntington's disease. Now, it can be really early, preclinical, as it's called, or there are really also big ongoing trials with patients as we speak.
Just to clarify for our readers, the two drugs that we're talking about that have been FDA approved, Xenosine, which is developed by Lundbeck Pharmaceuticals of Denmark, and Austedo, developed by Teva Pharmaceuticals of Israel. So those are the true FDA-approved drugs as of now. And then what about other treatments out there under investigation?
There are several treatments ongoing with clinical trials, which means that the test them on patients is to lower the protein that seems to be the main cause of the disease. It's called Huntingtin, this protein. So they kind of go to what we think is the root cause of the disease. And if we can lower that expression, as it's called, the volume of that protein in our cells, we have reason to believe that there will be less symptoms and maybe also a slower development of the disease. So that's really exciting.
Great. And let's we're running out of time. Let's wrap up, talk about the upcoming conference in Belgium. Just maybe say a few words about it. What do you hope to achieve? How many people are coming? And are you going to do it again?
Yeah, so this is our third or fourth conference that we organize every second year is the plan. So definitely we will do it again in 25. And it's for our member associations, so family members and patients to come together, but also healthcare professionals. It can be doctors, nurses, physiotherapists, you know, speech therapists, whoever who work with patients and families to support them in coping with the disease and living with the disease. And we bring ourselves together because it's a rare disease again, so many of us feel that we are quite alone in the everyday life, and that also accounts for the healthcare professionals, that they feel a little bit isolated working with this in this field. So coming together, meeting each other is very, very empowering, I would say, and it's really a very nice social also aspect of that. And then, of course, it's to educate ourselves, to learn from each other and to stay informed. Because again, knowing is power in a way in terms of dealing with the disease.
Well, we'll be covering that conference. I'll see you there. Astrid, thank you so much for talking with us all the way from Norway.
Thank you so much. And it's been a pleasure. And I look so much forward to see you in Blankenberg and be there.
Thanks again. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.